Chapter 6. What Others Say About Humility. Blessed John Paul II reminds us, God lets himself be conquered by the humble. He rejects the arrogance of the proud. God brings down to the dust of the earth those who defy heaven with their pride. In a Wednesday audience, he said, superficiality and social climbing do not constitute the real good of man and society. Quoting St. Paul, the Holy Father said that, the kingdom of God is effectively prepared by people who carry out their work seriously and honestly, not aspiring to things that are too high, but turning, in daily faithfulness, to those that are lowly. The mentality of the world pushes one to stand out, to get ahead, with shrewdness and without scruples, asserting oneself and one's own interests. The consequences can be seen by all: rivalries, abuses, frustrations. The kingdom of God, on the contrary, rewards meekness and humility. The proof of this is Jesus himself. Herein lies the secret, so that every activity, professional or in the home, may be done in an atmosphere of genuine humanity, thanks to the humble and active contribution of everyone. Pope Benedict points out, egoism and a genuine love of self are not only not identical, but are also mutually exclusive. It is possible to be a confirmed egoist and, at the same time, to be at odds with oneself. In fact, egoism is often due to one's own inner strife, to the attempt to create for oneself a different I, whereas the proper attitude to one's I grows spontaneously in an atmosphere of freedom from self. To the degree that we seek only for ourselves, to realize our own potential, and are concerned solely with the success and fulfillment of our I, to that same degree this becomes disagreeable, irritable, and repugnant. It disintegrates into a thousand forms, and in the end there remains only a dissatisfaction with self that leads to flight from oneself and a turning to drugs or one of the many other forms of a self-destructive egoism. Only when we have accepted ourselves can we address a genuine yes to anyone else. To accept, to love oneself, presumes the existence of truth, and requires that we never relinquish our quest for that truth. Monsignor James Turow insists, humility says much about a person's refinement of character. The bows that bear most hang lowest, English proverb. Dominican Father Sertiangus observes, pride aspires to the least height, disdaining to surpass itself. Humility is quite ready for the sublimest prospects. Some men would be capable of great things if they did not think themselves great. John Adams exhorted his grandson, John, the son of President John Quincy Adams, "The Lord delivers us from all family pride. No pride, John, no pride." To his granddaughter Caroline, he wrote, "You are not the only one who thinks they know very little. The longer I live, the more I read, the more patiently I think, and the more anxiously I inquire, the less I seem to know. Do justly, love mercy, walk humbly. That is enough." G.K. Chesterton maintained that humility is the key to happiness. As for pride, pride doesn't go before the fall. Pride is the fall. Demosthenes observed, "Nothing is so easy as to deceive oneself. For what we wish, we readily believe." Marie Curie confessed, "I never see what has been done. I only see what remains to be done." The famous Michelangelo, when complimented on his masterpieces, would say, "I am still learning." The servant of God, Archbishop Fulton Sheen, teaches us, "Though faith is a gift of God, and though God will give it to those who ask for it, there is one very human obstacle why more minds do not receive it, and that is pride. Pride is the most common sin of the modern mind, and yet one of which the modern mind is never conscious. Have you heard people say, 'I like drink too much,' or 'I am quick-tempered,' but did you ever hear anyone say, 'I am conceited'? Pride is the exaltation of self as an absolute standard of truth, goodness, and morality. It judges everything by itself, and for that reason everyone else is a rival, particularly God. Pride makes it impossible to know God. If I know everything, then not even God can teach me anything. If I am filled with myself, then there is no place for God. Like the inns of Bethlehem, we say to the divine visitor, 'There is no room.'" He continues, "Pride is of two kinds. One tries to convince your neighbor that you know everything. The other tries to convince your neighbor that he knows nothing. This last one is a technique used by the highly educated, who pride themselves on the fact that man can know nothing. Hence, they doubt everything, and of this they are very sure. They seem to forget that the doubting of everything is impossible, for doubt is a shadow, and there can be no shadow without light. If pride is the great human obstacle to faith, it follows that, from the human side, the essential condition of receiving faith is humility. Humility is not an underestimation of what we are, but the plain, unadulterated truth. A man who is 6 feet tall is not humble if he says, "No, really, I am only 5 feet tall." If there ever came a moment in your life when you admitted you did not know it all, or said, "Oh, what a fool am I," you created a vacuum and a void, which God's grace could fill. Before you accept the gift of faith, there may be a moment when you will think that you are giving up your reason, but that is not reality. Your eye does not constantly look out a light. Every few seconds it blinks, that is, it goes into temporary darkness. The blink apparently destroys vision. Really, the blink is the condition of better vision. So with your reason in relation to faith. There comes a time in conversion when you blink on your reason, that is, you doubt about its capacity to know everything, and you affirm the possibility that God could enlighten you. Then comes the gift of faith. Once that is received, you find out that instead of destroying your reason, you have perfected it. Faith now becomes to your reason what a telescope is to your eye. It opens up new fields of vision and new worlds which before were hidden and unknown. Learn from the Desert Fathers. A brother asked an old man, saying, "What is humility?" He replied, "It is when your brother sins against you, and you forgive him before he comes to ask for forgiveness." The old men used to say, "When we do not experience warfare, we ought so much the more to humiliate ourselves. For God, seeing our weakness, protects us. When we glorify ourselves, he withdraws his protection, and we are lost." The devil appeared to a brother disguised as an angel of light and said to him, "I am Gabriel, and I have been sent to you." The brother said to him, "See if it is not for someone else to whom you have been sent. As for me, I am not worthy for it." And immediately the devil vanished. An old man said, "If you have acquired the virtue of silence, do not consider yourself as having gained a virtue, but say, 'I am unworthy to speak.'" An old man said, "You must not say in your heart against your brother that you are more vigilant or more ascetic than he is, but by the grace of Christ submit yourself in a spirit of poverty and sincere charity, so that you may not lose your labor through the spirit of vainglory. Indeed, it is written, 'Let him who is standing take heed, lest he fall.'" 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12. Benjamin Franklin observed, "In reality, there is no one of our natural passions so hard to subdue as pride. Disguise it, struggle with it, beat it down, stifle it, mortify it as much as one pleases, it is still alive, and will every now and then peep out and show itself. You will see it, perhaps, often in this history, for even if I could conceive that I had completely overcome it, I should probably be proud of my humility."